Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time. Before we get into our interview, I just wanted to take a moment to recognize our friend, Bobby Heckman, who actually connected us to Catherine Mary Stewart, and let listeners know about his Friday the 13th fan film and 40th anniversary love letter to the franchise. It's called Victim No More and is going into production right around now. It's going to include a few special celebrity cameos and some surprises that hardcore Friday fans are going to absolutely love. You can find Victim No More on Instagram at VNM_2020, or look for the Victim No More Facebook page at www.facebook.com/bobbers1984. That's BOBBERS1984. And even though the campaign's currently over, Victim No More also has an Indiegogo page where you can find out more about the project. And there will be a website later in the year where you can view the film when it's completed and get Victim No More merchandise. So thank you again to Bobby, and please enjoy our interview with Catherine Mary Stewart.
Hello, and welcome to Happy Horror Time. I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert, and we are so excited to welcome to the podcast today. She's been in a ton of films. Horror fans will remember her as Reggie Belmont in Night of the Comet. Comedy fans will remember her as Gwen Saunders in Weekend at Bernie's. We're so excited to welcome Catherine Mary Stewart.
Woo! Hello!
Hi, so how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We are good. Good. We are so thankful to have you with us. Thank you so much for taking the time. You know, we've got a ton of questions for you, but before we jump into everything, so I read on trusty Wikipedia, because, you know, you can trust everything on there, that you grew up in Canada, but you originally wanted to be a dancer and went to school in London for dance. What kind of dance were you studying, and how did that transition into acting?
Right. Well, I was in Canada. I was in a company called Synergy. It was a jazz company. And when I graduated from high school, I decided to go to London and train more as a dancer, you know, with the prospect of getting into it. I mean, we had already been dancing as a company professionally, but, you know, I just wanted to expand my horizons, I guess. And went to London and studied at this place called London Studio Center, which offered not only dance, jazz dance specifically, but ballet, every kind of tap dance, every kind of dance you can think of, and acting and singing. So it was, you know, a general performing arts school, which was, it really was a great foundation for me, you know, ultimately. But I went there primarily to study dance and thinking that when I got back to Canada, I'd continue on with that sort of thing.
Is that what led to the Apple?
It certainly is.
Yeah, because I know the Apple was your first movie, right?
That's right. Yeah,
and it's a musical. Yeah. So you're not only a dancer, you're a singer also.
Well, yes. I mean, theoretically. actually, when we shot the Apple, although I was studying singing, and in fact they actually set me up with a coach also to train, because the rest of the cast, basically the lead cast, were all like musicians and professional singers. And so I was trying to get my chops up, as they say. But ultimately they ended up hiring this terrific singer from Los Angeles named Mary Hyland, and she flew out to London and recorded my my songs, and I lip sync to her. But no regrets at all, because I feel like her voice suited me perfectly, first of all, and I feel like I think the lip syncing worked really well. I think we were a really good match. But honestly, it was all about I really needed to be a very, very strong singer, and at that time I was, you know, 20, and I really didn't have the chops yet. Subsequently, I've sung in a couple of different things, but at that time, I think they made the right decision. It was a bit of a drag, but you know.
No, everyone does. I mean, I'm sure. My God, how many movies where the people, the actors, and they have other singers coming in, that's and especially, right. But that's such a cool first movie to be in.
My introduction to the Apple was at a midnight screening, and it was like the most rowdy group, and like I've never heard of the Apple, and so now that I know, I love it. It's really good.
Yeah, it's over the top, isn't it? It's pretty crazy,
my gosh.
But.
The
but
costume?
That's part of its charm.
Yes, and the thing you wear on the head right here.
You mean the BIM mark?
Come that's on. What I was yeah. I was couldn't I, remember what it,
it
was.
Is not that yeah. thing you wear.
I mean, you know what I'm saying. So, it's a visual.
BIM, it stands for Boogaloo International Music.
Yes.
Because Boogaloo, remember, he was like running the world. Yeah, so we all had to wear BIM marks.
Exactly, okay.
Yeah.
So did you, after that, you did Days of Our Lives?
I did. So when I eventually moved to Los Angeles, you know, the Apple opened the Montreal Film Festival, I think it was 1980. And to great aplomb, not. I think it might have even been the first year of the Montreal Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
And I get the story that I heard was that the son of the guy who sort of created the Montreal Film Festival thought it was fantastic. And my theory is he'd smoked a whole bunch of pot. And so it opened the film festival and then people were just like, what is this? At any rate, eventually I went down to Los Angeles and because I'd been in this movie, you know, I had the lead role in a feature film, I ended up getting an agent relatively quickly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then just started pounding the pavement, and yeah, it all worked out that I ended up on Days of Our Lives. Yeah.
So what's the craziest storyline you had on Days of Our Lives?
Yeah, like what did they end up doing to your character? Because I don't watch soaps.
I watch soaps.
Tim does, but like I feel like they always do something crazy to every character, and you were on there for a while, right?
I was on there for 2 years, not that long. But yeah, I mean, just in general, doing soap operas is really hard work. It's just like, I found it extremely difficult just having to memorize so much dialogue if your storyline was strong, you know, because they would shoot an hour show in one day, mm-hmm. as opposed to a movie that's like an hour and a half in 2 months, you know? And I went from The Apple to like, Days of Our Lives, where all of a sudden I'm trying to memorize, you know, at times like 50 pages of dialogue or something.
What I mean, that, like, what do you have like a tip for someone? Like, I'm gonna be on a soap, but do you have like, is there like a tip like for fast memorization? Is there
like a lot of pot?
Oh, drugs. You know, it just drives me crazy when I hear actors who say, oh yeah, you know, I can read it once and then I pretty much got it. I'm just like, ugh.
I hate those people.
So much. And as I get older, I'm just getting worse and worse. I'm telling you, it's just, I need cue cards now. I'm kidding. You know, it's hard. You just have to really focus. I think so many actors just make a career out of being on a soap opera. And I think this is, again, I'm full of theories, by the way. I'll just warn you right now. My theory about that is that they know their characters so well and they're so into the writing that it just isn't that hard for them anymore. You know, I mean, it's like, you know what I mean? They're so comfortable in their own skin in that situation.
The Susan Lucci of the world.
It's like any job. I mean, I'm trying to think of like when people stay in jobs way longer than maybe they should, it's because they're just comfortable, you know? And so.
Right. Right. And you know, I mean, it's some people love being on soap operas. Why not? It's that it's its own little sort of universe and ecosystem. It really is. And more power to them, man. And the audience too. I mean, I was the first Kayla Brady. And the character was a nurse and she was virginal and very innocent and empathetic and, you know, just basically the sweetest person on the planet Earth. Just
you're
like
so just, dull.
Just, kidding, no. Just like me. So there wasn't a lot of scandal, but she did lose her virginity.
Oh my gosh.
On the show.
Stop the presses right now.
I know.
To Chris Kosacek, who eerily or ickily now, the actor is now playing Bo Brady. No, not Bo, but Roman Brady, who was my brother. So back in the day. It's just like creepy, but
so your character is still alive. It's just being played by someone else.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch just to check in?
I do on occasion, you know,
that's and awesome.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, it's so funny because you can, with soap operas, you can sort of pick up right from where you left off. No matter how long it's been, how many decades it's been since you've watched.
Yeah.
Well, but the weirdest thing probably was my last day is I think I moved into a new apartment with a roommate. I forget who the roommate was. And I said, I'm just going to go upstairs and check out the bathroom. And I never came back.
That's how you ended?
The bathroom must have been beautiful.
I think a comet hit.
I am. Either that or really, really dirty and I'm still cleaning or something. Right?
Wow, that is amazing. Oh, that's a great story. So 1984 comes and you're starring in two big movies. You know, since we're all about horror, we're going to focus less on The Last Starfighter, which is great, but we're going to focus mostly on Night of the Comet. Although before we get into Night of the Comet, there is one question I wanted to ask you about The Last Starfighter. So this is crazy, but so The Last Starfighter was directed by Nick Castle, who was the original Michael Myers in Halloween. And you starred alongside Lance Guest, who was in 1981's Halloween 2. So I'm just a huge, huge, huge Halloween series fan. Did you know at the time, first off, look at the shirt. I have to show you.
People love it.
Wearing a new Halloween shirt. Did you know at the time that the movie had two huge Halloween alumni in it? Did you know about Halloween at the time, or didn't even factor?
Knew nothing about Halloween. I still know very little about. I watched the last one where
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, she's in the basement with the gun. You know, I don't know. No idea. In fact, wasn't Lance on Halloween after The Last Starfighter, or no, before?
It
might have been after.
Before, 1981, but it's just so funny because it was two big Halloween alumni, and then suddenly
they moved
on to that. I know, but totally fine. Only a crazy nerd like me.
I learned about all that stuff afterwards. You know, we've done quite a few conventions together. Lance and I are really good friends, and I'm really good friends with Nick as well. We're all still all in touch and all that junk. I learned about all that stuff at conventions, because conventions are so, you know, horror heavy. And Night of the Comet, it's kind of on the cusp of being a horror-omedy?
A horror-omedy.
How did you get your audition for Night of the Comet, and what was that like?
It was just, I'd done The Last Starfighter, so I had a little bit of cred by that time. So I probably didn't have to go through the very first sort of casting director session. I believe I read for the producers and the director. And we were, Kelly and I were both paired with somebody else that was sort of more physically like each of us, who the young woman that I was reading with had sort of brown hair and blue eyes and eyebrows and all that stuff. And Kelly was reading with a blonde girl, you know, very fair. And so and we'd seen each other, like we saw the pairings and we're like, that makes sense. So we'll see what happens. And then when we both got the roles, we were called to the studio again to do like a photo session, which is what you see in the movie, like a picture of the two of us, or with our dad, which is Tom Everhart, funnily enough. We saw each other, we're like, oh gosh, I didn't expect to see you here. So that was kind of funny. It was just a regular audition process. But like I said, I think that at that point I'd done The Last Starfighter, and so, you know,
That little leg up kind of thing.
A little bit, I think.
And I've got to ask, because I think this woman that you read with, is it true that was Heather Langenkamp from Nightmare on Elm Street?
That's I believe it was. That's what I've read too. I didn't know that at the time. I've read that since, you know, doing, I mean, even in the last few years I read that, but yeah.
That's so funny because it's the same year, Night of the Comet came out the same year as Nightmare on Elm Street. And I'm just wondering if she had gotten the role, Kelly Maroney's role, if she would have not been in Nightmare on Elm Street and the world would have changed. It is funny.
I have
though.
No idea. I don't know at all.
Yeah, it is funny how it all connects, you know, with
it
that.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So so before you got that role, though, were you...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, were you a fan of sci-fi or horror? Were there any fan, or like, did you ever have any dreams of being in like a horror or genre film like that?
You know, at that point in my career, I was just sort of looking. I had been cast a lot as kind of the girl next door, you know, the very, very much the last Starfighter kind of thing. mostly on television, like, you know. Just Hollywood Wives and all sorts of, you know, Days of Our Lives is a good example. Oh, thank you.
Suzanne Summers.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, that was a cast of thousands. It was really interesting to be on that. But I wanted, when I read Night of the Comet, what really attracted me to it was the fact that this was kind of like a departure from what I'd been cast as previously. And frankly, much closer to my own personality. You know, I grew up with two brothers, older brothers, and I was always kind of like a tomboy. Yeah, I got into dance, but I hated ballet, for instance. You know, it was too rigid for me. I was into gymnastics. I was really athletic.
And the movie is so physical. Like, there's a fight scene. Like, is that all you? Or, I mean, like...
Yeah, the fight scene with the zombie in the alley.
Yes. Yeah, did you do the stunts, the fighting stunts yourself? Oh, you!
It was so much fun.
What kind of training did they give you for that? To do that sort of thing? I mean, because you know, you look like you are a well trained fighter. You're a well trained fighter in that.
I am so badass in that. But you know, we did. I don't remember training specifically for that scene, but the guy who played the zombie was a stunt guy. So, and I said, you know, I am perfectly comfortable doing this. I was, like I said, I was a dancer. So I was, you know, and I was flexible and pretty strong. And he was very gentle with me, and he threw me into this pile of boxes, which collapsed around me. It was all figured out. And then the thing I grab and I hit him across the back or whatever, or face or head or whatever. It was a breakaway board. And then, that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie for me, like experience wise. Well, I mean, I just love that whole sequence in the alley.
Oh, it's awesome. And not to give away any secrets or anything, but was it you on the motorcycle?
You're asking all the secrets.
I know. Like, we're asking.
How
all
is it to sing in the apple?
You're like, where is Days of Our Lives character? Is she still in the bathroom? We're gonna ask
in the bathroom. You know, I know. It's humbling, this career. Trust me. I did not ride the motorcycle. There was this wonderful young woman who did that for me. I had no experience riding, and motorcycles are heavy.
I have no interest in motorcycles.
I would have preferred the fight over the motorcycle.
Oh my gosh,
also.
Forget it.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, the fight was really fun. And then running up and, you know, to the motorcycle and all that junk. And then again, hitting the zombie, which was super fun. I love all that junk, but I threw my leg over the motorcycle and pretend to start it. And then you'll note that they cut to behind me zooming off.
And that's downtown Los Angeles, right?
That wasn't downtown. That was on Wilshire Boulevard. The theater that we shot that in is still there, actually.
Yeah, I was gonna see that.
Yeah, it was on Wilshire Boulevard. Like, I think generally the area is called Miracle Mile, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But we ended up shooting a lot of stuff in downtown LA, like post Comet, you know, and I'm on the motorcycle and there's that Mercedes stopped, and I look in, and I'm waiting for the light, and there's nobody around. That was downtown Los Angeles back in 1980, I guess. I mean, yeah, no, I guess 81, 82.
This is such a cliched question, but I mean, like, how did, okay, because this movie was on heavy rotation on HBO when I was a kid, so it scared me.
Okay, good.
I mean, like, because just the emptiness of the city freaked me out. How did you guys clear out Los Angeles? Or
attention, Los Angeles.
Film at like 5 a.m. or how did you get that empty look of the film?
Well, Los Angeles back then is nothing like it is now. I mean, it's very residential now and very hip and lots of junk going on down there. But at the time, all it was like, you know, tall bank buildings and a few hotels, but it was completely different. Nobody was there like on weekends, or it was a little bit busy during the week. And again, like banking and things like that. But I think we shot that. I have to ask Tom Heberhart exactly what day we shot that, because I keep saying, you know, it was like Christmas morning or the you know, really early, and it was literally deserted. There was nobody there.
Because but you had to work on Christmas.
You know, we did lots of stuff in that movie. The budget was really low. It was under $1 million. And it was, I often refer to it as guerrilla filmmaking. We were just like, fine, you know, I'm not even sure that it was totally legal that we were doing. We didn't have like a whole bunch of police stopping traffic and things. And apparently in one of those downtown scenes, you see a car kind of pull into the intersection behind, in the background. I still haven't really found that yet specifically, but
like, excuse me, sir, can you take your business somewhere else? A comet just hit.
Right. Can't you tell that we're deserted because of a comet? And you're supposed to be dead. You're supposed to be dead dust.
It could have been a zombie.
So you touched on, you know, your co-star Kelly Maroney, and I wanted to ask, what was your relationship like with her while filming? Because you guys have such a great chemistry as sisters, and I was wondering if you were close while filming and how that worked out.
Did you learn how to shoot guns together?
We did, actually. That is the one training that we did have to do, which is, of course, smart. You know, these MAC-10s that we had, although they're filled with blanks. But yes, I mean, I forget what the actor's name is, but previous to the shooting of this, there was an actor who was fooling around with a gun that was supposedly had blanks in it, and he held it up to his head.
I remember that.
Remember that? Yeah, yes. Really super tragic. So the climate was, you have to be as careful as possible. I remember with the little MAC-10, and we were in some field shooting into a, you know, bales of hay or whatever. And I finished, and I said, what do you think? And they're like, no! You know what I mean? I mean, because I waved my gun towards the guy who was training us. And that was a very important lesson to learn, is that you never, ever, ever point a gun at anybody, you know.
Only so they could teach that to everyone in the world.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, most people who own guns, you know, that's all they want to do.
Yeah.
But that was a very valuable lesson. So yes, we learned how to shoot those guns, which, you know, ultimately turned out to be just horrible, because they literally did jam all the time. There's that little scene in there where say, Daddy would have gotten us Uzi.
Yeah, I know. I heard about that.
Which was, you know, it kept jamming and jamming. And finally, we just like, you know, made it up. We added that into the scene, because it was just ridiculous. But anyway.
So were you guys close while filming? Did you guys develop like a sister-like relationship? Or how was that with filming with her? Because I'm sure you had to film so much with her, obviously.
Right. Yeah, we did. Absolutely. I remember the very first day we shot the scene where I walk into her house and she's kind of in denial. You know, she's upstairs in the bathroom, and we scare each other. And I'm like, you know, trying to convince her that there's nobody around. And she's like, no, I got to go to cheerleading practice or whatever. And she's like in total denial of the whole thing. And then the radio comes out. That was our very first day of shooting. So we got to know each other really well that first day, for sure. We didn't spend much time together before that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's such a weird business in that it becomes its own little bubble, you know, and you're with each other most of the day, and you really do get to know each other really
was
well.
Like you girl, when you were dancing to Girls Just Wanna Have Fun, was that your favorite scene, or what was your favorite scene?
Yeah, the scene in the mall, actually speaking of, because there's a huge scene. You guys are trying on outfits, you're dancing, you have a gun battle. First off, where was that filmed? Because that was another totally vacant area.
Well, that was Sherman Oaks Galleria, had been used. It's not even a mall anymore. They just completely redid it. But it had been used for lots of films like Valley Girl and things like that. Even Kelly shot
Chopping Mall.
I was like, what was that movie?
That movie with the mall?
She can't get away from those malls.
I know. I was thinking that too. What I saw. Yeah. She's always in the malls. There's always danger in the mall for her.
So shooting in the mall, it was in the middle of the night. When the mall closed, we moved in. And so we had a very restricted kind of timeline. And we just shot all night long. And a lot of that stuff was, you know, making it up as we went along as well, the dancing and the makeup and running up and down the stairs, all that stuff. We just sort of ad-libbed as we went. Yeah. Which it was super fun, for sure.
I was just going to say, that seems like, for me, like it must have been the most fun, just because you can just basically hang out and have fun, you know, and dance and everything.
Yeah.
At 3 in the morning.
At 3 in the morning. I'm pretty sure we only shot one night there. So there was a lot of stuff to cover. I mean, the stuff where you go underground and we're all tied up and junk.
That could be filmed anywhere.
So we had to like get everything done in the mall in one night. So it was a lot to cover, but it was fun. I mean, again, shooting off the guns and shoes and things flying all over the place. You could just imagine somebody throwing shoes up in the air.
I know. There's so many crazy things that happen. You know, I read another thing. These are just crazy facts that I read on IMDb, that in an earlier draft of the script, Sam, Kelly Maroney's part, actually died. Was this ever in the script that you read?
I'm sure it was. It's funny because I don't remember that specifically. But that was the thing. I guess she literally died, but they thought, you need to ask Tom about this. They may have even shot that, but then, you know, test screening or something, for some reason, they changed it to her surviving, which is great.
That would have been such a downer. Well, because, you know, she gets she gets put out by the scientists with that sedative or whatever. And, you know, you think, and I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, did they just kill her sister like that? Like, this is such a light movie type of movie. So thank God that they changed it. But speaking of like kind of the mix of horror and comedy, I was just wondering, what was your feelings on like the kind of mix of it? Do you like the mix? Would you prefer to be more like full on horror, full on comedy, or did you kind of like how it ended up?
I love how it ended up. I don't think it would have stood the test of time nearly as well had it been one way or the other. In fact, the producers wanted it, sort of pictured it as a horror movie. They wanted to make the zombie movie. And Tom Everhart, that was never his intention. You know, he's like, that's not what this is. This is it's got that element, but it's also got this element of these teenage girls and what would you do in an apocalypse? And that's kind of funny. And it hadn't been done before, you know, that kind of, that mixture of the two genres. And so while we were shooting, they would have us shoot some scenes in a horror sort of way. And then they would have us shoot also in like the way Tom wrote it, which was more, you know, at times tongue in cheek or whatever. And fortunately, they all decided that the sort of the hybrid, you know, works. I mean, it makes it unique. It makes it
totally
different.
Works because when it came out, like, you guys went up against some like major studio movies and like you did very well.
Yeah.
I mean, like you're in the top 10. Yeah.
And also I just want to take a quick moment to gush a little because I just want to applaud you for your performance as Reggie. No, but seriously, because she's such a strong and smart and relatable character at a time when there probably weren't a ton of roles like that available for women. And she, you know, she's a fighter. She doesn't take shit from anyone. She doesn't need a guy to like defend her. And it's really a testament to your performance. I mean, so it was a great performance. And do you feel like the character of Reggie is an inspiration for young women even today?
Well, I you got to give credit to Tom Eberhardt, who wrote it and directed. Yeah. And he tells a story about how he had this idea and he interviewed these young women like, so what would happen if, you know, a comet destroyed the Earth? I mean, what would you do? And he was so surprised because they were like, oh, you mean I don't have to go home to my parents? They were so happy. They were like, what would we do? We'd go to the mall. We'd do all this fun stuff, as opposed to what he thought they would say would be like, oh my God, it would be horrible. They were thrilled. So that's he was like, I am totally doing that. Yeah. But so what was the question?
Oh, I just said, well, do you feel like the character, just being such a strong female character, is an inspiration to young women even today?
Well, again, you know, I am exposed to the audience through these conventions, which is so cool. I just love it. And yes, is the answer to the question, because so many they're not so young anymore, the ones that saw the original movie, but absolutely have said that directly, that Regina and Samantha inspired them, you know, and to be strong women. And this whole idea that for men, girls can't be like strong, or they always have to be sort of the love interest or whatever, is absolutely a fallacy. So many men just think Reggie is the greatest character and such a, you know, great female character that's inspirational and all that other stuff. So it goes both ways for men and women. Yeah. Well, I think you're right that, you know, we go through these generations where somehow these strong female characters are in movies and then all of a sudden they fade away again. And I mean, now you have the superhero kind of movies with, you know, Wonder Woman and all that stuff. But in my mind, we still need sort of realistic, down-to-earth, strong characters that are female that can carry a movie, and they can. But I feel like the industry, especially, you know, in the big picture, it's controlled by businessmen.
Yeah.
In general, that just want to make as much money as they can. Yeah, exactly. They don't think in terms of, expanding their view in terms of creativity or female characters or whatever. That's changing slowly but surely, which is great. It's great.
And I think that's why this movie's lasted so long. I mean, like, they have screenings. Have you ever been to the Egyptian or the New Beverly when your movies are always like sold out and they have such huge crowds?
Yeah, it develops such a cult following. It's just big. I wonder if, did you feel like it was, is it the kind of thing that at the time was, I mean, did you think you'd be talking about it however many years later? Like when it first, 37 years later?
I didn't think I'd be talking about anything I did 37 years ago, let alone you don't go into one of these movies thinking, oh, this is going to make me. Well, it's funny because Chris Hebert from The Last Starfighter, he was a little brother, right? He at the time was like, this is going to make me a movie star, but he was young, you know. Yeah. And actually, he got some great accolades for that role, but it didn't. No. No, I wasn't thinking, oh, in 30, 40 years, I'll be talking about this movie. I just, you just sort of go into it day to day and enjoy the experience and do the best job you can. And it's actually shocking in many ways that it has lasted as long as it has, you know.
Was there a red carpet premiere for this movie, or was I know that everything is documented through Facebook and Instagram, but I mean, was there any?
Yeah. Any screening for the cast and crew before? Like, what was it? I guess, what was it like seeing it? What was it like seeing it for the first time on the big screen?
I remember, I'm sure there was a red carpet, something rather. There must have been a screening. I honestly don't remember it. I may have been working on something else at the time, because I remember specifically going to a screening, not an official screening, but just in the theater in Westwood. Mm. And just sitting in the back just to see what the audience reaction was. Uh-huh. So I feel like that was the first time I saw it on the big screen, which was interesting. Some people didn't get it. And it wasn't it wasn't a huge audience, but it was fun to, you know, sit in amongst the people and watch it.
Did anyone recognize you? Look, it's Reggie.
No.
Oh my God. After it came out, was there ever any, and I think you've been asked this before, but was there ever any talk of a sequel, or did they ever talk about that? And what was that like? Yeah. Was there ever talk about bringing back the two girls for a sequel?
Kelly Maroney actually tried to get rights to the movie for a number of years, a while back. I'm going to screw this up. I think it was owned by Universal. They wouldn't give her the rights. But there's now, for writers in the Writers Guild, I guess, there's a clause that after 30 years, you know, the studio owns it, but after 30 years, the writer can reclaim it. So she never got the rights to it because she was thinking, wouldn't it be great to do a sequel? But Tom Eberhardt finally got the rights to it, but he's not interested in making a sequel.
Oh.
So although it would be great, you know, it would be really cool to do one, but he's not interested. So, I mean, maybe, you know.
Who knows? People change their minds. Here's the thing, Tom, if you're out there, there's a ton of people that would like you to be. Well, I guess the question would be, if let's say Tom changed his mind, Kelly was in, would you be up for reprising the role?
Oh my God, are you kidding? Yeah.
Okay, good.
Because you and Hector created a family.
Yeah.
Hello. I wouldn't mind creating a bit of a mom family.
Yeah. Hector was cute. I love how it's like, because you're supposed to be 18, and I think the kids, let's say they're like 12, 10, and you kind of act like you're their parents. And I was like, aren't you only like 5 years older than them? But it's a great family dynamic. Like,
yeah, I was like the matron of the earth.
Yeah, you were starting to procreate new earth. So, you know, moving on, we do want to ask you a few questions non-Night of the Comet, as much as we absolutely love Night of the Comet. But you know, you've done a lot of different kind of like sci-fi and horror movies throughout your career. And just a couple silly questions about some of them. So in the sci-fi movie Night Flyers from 1987, so you played kind of this headstrong project coordinator on a possessed spaceship with a sort of a hologram love interest. Totally, you know, normal kind of plot. It kind of was like Alien, but without the alien.
The ship was the alien.
Yeah, exactly. So my question is, and this is very, very important. Other than what was that kind of movie like to film, did you do that gymnastic scene on the uneven bars yourself?
See, now.
Because that's what everyone wants
terrible.
To know.
I would just say, I should just say yes to it all. Yeah. So
I'll believe you. I'll believe you.
I 100% knew the answer was no. But it's so funny because, first off, I'm watching it, it's like this sci-fi movie, you're this serious, and then suddenly you're on the uneven bars doing gymnastics, and I just, and the hologram's watching you, and I'm like, this is the scene of the movie.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. And the poor girl that actually did that, you know, I did gymnastics when I was much younger, and I, you know, 15 years previous that I probably could have, but at the time there's no way I could have done that. But the poor thing, you know, it was, these were metal bars, and she, I guess they gave her some chalk for her hands, but you know, uneven bars, I'm assuming they're the same still, wood and you know, there wasn't too much friction on your hands, especially if you put chalk on. Her hands were ripped to shreds when she finished shooting that thing. The poor thing. She did such a good job, but I sort of jumped down and went like that.
There is a that, like, it looks very that's the thing. Like, it looks very convincing. So there was a part, even though I was like 99% sure it wasn't you, just because what actor or actress just happens to know, you know, uneven bars, it looks very convincing. So, but that was my number one question on on Night Flyers. Moving on.
I have my number one question. So you got to work on the movie Psychic with Zach Galligan from Waxwork and Gremlins. Now, with our investigative journalism, we're not journalists, but we watched Psychic and I totally loved it because, you know, here it's been like rainy. And so we watched Psychic. And so I was just wondering about your experience with Psychic. Are you psychic?
Have you experienced any psychic phenomena in your life?
I want to say no. Just the typical stuff, I suppose, like deja vu or something like that. But Psychic was Zach Galligan's adorable, first of all, give me a break. And also Michael Nouri was on it.
Yeah, he was the professor, right?
Yes. He was the nasty professor.
Sexiest serial killer ever.
I know. He's so good, isn't he? Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, he has that buttery voice thing going on. Yeah, it was pretty cute.
Just makes you want to get stabbed and strangled.
With a belt. We just get rid of it.
Yeah, I know.
That's right. No, that was really fun. It was cold. We shot that in Toronto, I think.
It looked cold.
It was freezing.
But
you know that
beautiful sweater.
I know. Sweater. I actually really loved the wardrobe on that thing. And this is a little secret. I think it's the very first and last. There's one good thing about being the girl next door is you're always sort of portrayed in a virginal sort of way. So you never have sort of like heavy duty sex scenes. But we did do this scene where Zach and I, you know, jump into bed together and they closed the set. And I was like, I think I had little pasties on my itty bitty boots. And so that was sort of like pretty edgy for me, but it was fun with Zach.
Zach is a good looking guy, but I thought it was, the scene was pretty like soapy. Like I didn't like feel like it was racy.
Yeah, but for the girl next door, it's racy.
For me, it was racy. It was like, we had wine. I remember that. It was like, we drank some wine ahead of time. They closed the set. It was all very, very not sexy, really. I mean, certainly not racy, but for me it was.
Now, were you
I enjoyed it.
Were you bummed you couldn't? I mean, like, I know your character, you had the choice between Zach and the professor, but who would you choose?
Yeah, they were both a little weird, weren't they? I mean, Zach and his crazy psychic stuff.
Yeah.
And the other one being
I mean, I've always been sort of an older man kind of gal.
Oh, so you but so I, the professor.
I might have gone with the professor, but, you know, in retrospect, absolutely Zach.
In retrospect, after hearing about the killings.
After I realize he's a serial murderer, I think I'll go with the psychic.
You know what? I'll go with your answer too.
So fast forward to 2007. You starred in The Attic as the mother of a very young Elizabeth Moss. So here's the question, you know, did you enjoy working with Elizabeth Moss? Did you have any inkling at the time that she'd be like this rising star? Because I think this was very early in her career, right?
She had done West Wing. She'd been in West Wing for however many years. So she definitely was an established actress, but I knew of her, but I don't think I'd watched West Wing. I knew of her. She was terrific. She's for that role, she had to lose a lot of weight because she goes, this is kind of, I thought it was a pretty cool movie actually. And it was also, after I moved to New York from Los Angeles, things really slowed down. I was, first of all, I would have had to sort of reestablish myself in New York. Believe it or not, they're like two different industries in a way. And I also had two babies. So I kind of was like, I was kind of putting my career on the back burner a little bit. And The Attic was one of the first movies that I did sort of coming out of that. And I really enjoyed doing that movie. I thought it was a great concept. They had some terrific actors.
Yeah.
I mean, Elizabeth Moss, she was so good in this. I thought John Savage played my husband.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Tom Molloy was, he stayed a friend of mine, but he wrote it and he was also, and he played my sort of crazy,
son,
brother.
Right?
Sorry.
Yeah.
and then you had Sex in the City's Jason
Lewis. Yes,
yeah.
Jason
Lewis.
Was the detective.
He was in there.
Paramedic,
really,
yeah.
Really.
There was
cute.
A big twist. I just gave it away.
Yes. Mary Lambert directed it.
Yes, who's, from Pet Cemetery.
Done a ton of stuff. Yes, Pet Cemetery. I really, and then when I get my face blown off.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
You mean from Elizabeth Moss, from your lovely daughter?
Yes, thanks very much. But I thought that makeup was just incredible. I that special effects makeup, and also when Tom Molloy gets his throat cut, it was so fantastic. And
so
special effects makeup he's done. His name's Anthony Pepe. He has done so well since then, but he was awesome. He was awesome. This was one of his earlier projects. Such an awesome special effects makeup guy.
So are there any other, just looking back on your career, any other horror sci-fi movies you look back on fondly, or you have any good memories on anything that, because I know we've left out a bunch, but are there any specifics that you, you know, look back on and are really memorable throughout your career?
I always say this, I'm afraid, that every project that I've done is I've just enjoyed for what it is, and I try to be as diverse as possible, and it's always, you know, hopefully something interesting and new and challenging. And for the most part, I feel like I've been so lucky with all the actors that I've worked with.
Yeah.
Rod Steiger, for instance, I worked with in Hollywood Wives, and he played my father in a miniseries called Passion in Paradise that I was, Mariette Hartley was my mother, and Armand DeSante.
Oh, okay.
I played my boyfriend. That's a really great miniseries. I wasn't crazy about the title in the end, but it's kind of like a historically accurate portrayal of a woman in the Bahamas during the Second World War. It's a cool movie. I did remember the movie Nighthawks with Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
Yeah. That was a pretty memorable Rutger Hauer, who plays, I have this little teeny weeny role. I was still living in London at the time, which is where they shot this. And I was this sales girl behind the perfume counter. And Rutger Hauer comes up and sort of seduces me as he's tucking a bomb under my counter. And that
classic,
yeah,
then, move.
Oh, I know, that's gonna get me on a date. But Rutger Hauer, he's sort of seared into my brain for the rest of my life because he never broke character.
And he's scary.
Yeah, he definitely
so
can be
scary. Holy moly, he scared the crap out of me. I was just like, I don't know what I've done, but he hates me. No, he was just into his character, you know. And Sylvester Stallone was quite a character. You know, he'd done Rocky, and so it was pretty
huge.
Exciting to work with him.
Yeah.
He was huge.
And he's still doing Rocky movies. And Rambo. I mean, he is still playing Rocky.
Yeah. So that was really cool for me to just be involved with that. I mean, honestly, to try to choose, you know, a very specific thing, Night Flyers, for instance, that you brought up earlier, they hadn't even written the end of that movie when we were shooting it. And it was just, that one was tough. It was so full of kind
of holograms.
too much. It was too much. But the actors, again, unbelievable cast. Really, really good cast. So I've been very, very lucky in my career, I feel like.
Yeah,
totally. Definitely. We're enjoying your career.
Yeah, definitely. just like a couple last questions. Do you, so of all of, with all the movies that you've been in, do you still keep in touch with any of the stars from like
Zach Galligan?
Well, like,
Terry
yeah, some of the big ones, like, do you still keep in touch with Kelly Maroney or Zach Galligan or Elizabeth Moss or anything?
Elizabeth Moss, no. Zach Galligan and I do conventions together. We're represented by the same guy. So we cross paths every once in a while. I've even seen him at an audition or two in New York. He was living in New York for a long time. He's now in the Southeast somewhere. Kelly Maroney and I are really good friends. Cool. Still. We, see each other whenever I'm in Los Angeles, which was fairly often. And, Tom Eberhardt and I have sort of gotten to know each other again. I emailed him or something. I forget why, but we've all of a sudden we're like buddies again. He's great. He's basically.
Can you tell
retired.
Him that Matt and Tim from Happy Horror Time would love him to reconsider doing a sequel, please?
Oh, I will. I'll let him know.
Yeah. And he's like, there it is. Changed my
there
mind.
There it is. Yeah, yeah. Clicked. Just switched right there. Yeah, I'm still really good friends. I think I mentioned with Lance Guest and Nick Castle. And again, whenever I'm in LA, Lance and his wife invite me over and feed me,
so
which
cool.
is very, very good. Oh yeah, they're the best. He's just a lovely guy. And they were living in New York for a few years, and so we saw them a lot here. I did a movie called Mischief. Years ago,
I
around
love
the
oh yes, of course,
I love
yes,
yeah.
I didn't want to bring it up.
No, yeah, I know. But there's so many that we couldn't talk about. Not we couldn't, but just because we're focusing on horror. But yes, of course, yes. Mischief.
Yeah, Doug McKeon and Chris Nash were still in touch and really good friends. So you know, it seems like the earlier movies were very bonding somehow. Mm-hmm. Although there was like periods where we didn't speak, and somehow we were brought back together in one way or the other. And again, when I go out to LA, I really try to see both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
That's cool. I mean, yeah. We've asked this question to most people. Most people are like, well, maybe like one or two, and you're like in touch with like
That's
all
great.
Of these
I
stars.
Love that you embrace.
Well, because I'm sure all these films, it's like it's a bonding experience, and it's an experience, it's a shared memory you'll always have for the rest of your
That's
life,
right.
you know, that
That's
you were
right.
all in this together. So our final question, and we ask everyone we interview this, little bit on the spot, but what is one thing that you can tell us about either your experience working on Night of the Comet or any of these other horror films that you've never told another interviewer or podcaster or publication? Just one thing, could be tiny, anything, just one tiny thing that you've never told anyone.
It wasn't me singing.
Oh no.
No, let me think. That's a great question. Wow.
We've gotten some of the craziest answers. Like some people will tell us the tiniest thing, like, oh, I didn't eat lunch before, blah, blah, blah. And some people are like, well, I had an affair with this person. So you can decide how tiny or how big, but something that maybe you've never told anyone.
You don't have to shock us.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, certainly, you know, working on these kinds of, well, working on movies in general, it's like affairs can tend to run rampant. But I was, I did not have an affair on Night of the Comet. I was tempted, but I was married at the time and living in LA. So I was going home every night. So it's not like I was on location anywhere.
Yeah.
That I could like,
not like summer camp.
Right. And, you know, what happens on the set stays on the set, they say. one time, it's not exciting really, but one time we had, you know, catered food and everything. I don't know if it was like sushi or something. And I'm eating this sushi on the set. I got so sick. I was so sick from the food that they were serving on the set of Night of the Comet. And so after that, I was really tiptoeing around, you know, whether I would eat this food or not. Actually, that's happened to me a few times, getting food poisoning on sets. You have to be so careful.
You have to just eat safe food because my boss is a director. He gets the same meal every single day.
Sushi is a gamble. Right. I mean, I love sushi, but like that is definitely a gamble. Wow, that is.
And there are quite a few actors actually who do that, who don't eat the catered food at all. They'll just like Andrew McCarthy on Weekend at Bernie's. He would order McDonald's every day. Yeah, you know, I always give them the benefit of the doubt, but I can think of three separate times where I got such bad food poisoning. With Night of the Comet, and I always would go back to work the next day. You have to be careful with that.
You told me that Andrew McCarthy had McDonald's because that's the real takeaway.
You're like, so everyone, Andrew McCarthy likes McDonald's. No, Catherine, it has been such a pleasure.
Yes.
Seriously,
thank you.
We were so looking forward to this interview. We're so happy that Bobby Heckman introduced us.
Butters for you.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Yeah. We're so appreciative. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. You're awesome.
Okay, great.
Oh, it was my pleasure. You guys, you're really fun.
Thank you. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll be in touch. okay,
be in touch. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and many other platforms.
If you'd like to stay updated on the podcast, please like and follow our Happy Horror Time page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
To contact us, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your movie recommendations or any horror stars you'd like us to interview.
To support the podcast and gain access to our bonus episodes, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime and sign up to be a patron. We try to release at least one bonus episode per month and really appreciate the support.
Before we go, I just want to give a major shout out to our co-producer, Jacob Randall, without whom this podcast wouldn't be possible. Please check out his true crime podcast. It's called Crime of Your Life, where he examines obscure and unsolved criminal cases and mysteries. It's incredibly engaging for both true crime lovers or just anyone who loves a good mystery. So we highly recommend Crime of Your Life.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert.
And thanks again for listening to Happy Horror Time.